This week, we started in Judges 17. And as I was reading, and I want you to turn over to Judges 17. Now, how many judges were there?
15.
Who's the last one? Samuel. Samuel, right. So we read about Samuel this week. And about the first king over the whole Israelite nation. But this is really interesting here at the beginning of Judges 17. Now there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother that 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you on which you put a curse, even saying in my ears, here's the silver with me, I took it. And his mother said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my son. And so when he returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I had wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord. And notice the Lord there has capital letters, so it's talking about Yahweh, to Yahweh, for my son, to make a carved image and a molded image. Now therefore I will return it to you. Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the silversmith. And he made it into a carved image and a molded image. And they were in the house of Micah. The man Micah had a shrine. What do you do at shrines?
Worship.
Yeah. Had a shrine and made an ephod and a household idols. And he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. Now, here's the explanation of why he did these ridiculous things. Or she and he both. Verse 6, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Does that explain it? Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. It sounds like every generation. Right? Are there always some people who do as they see fit?
Certainly.
Yeah. Why did they do that? Who's behind all this nonsense?
Satan.
Yeah. Satan. I mean, he's incredibly sneaky. And so, you know, so they go on and he hires his own priest, and on and on and on in this chapter. Look at verses 30 and 31 of chapter 18. Then the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of captivity of the land. What tribe was authorized to be priest?
Levites.
Does it matter to them? Doesn't seem so. Verse 31, so they set up for themselves Micah's carved image, which he made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. Amazing. Mind-boggling. And then, beginning in chapter 19, they have a civil war with one of the tribes, with Benjamin. And so, why did they have a civil war? What is going on that they would have a civil war? And so there's a man who got married to a concubine. He went from Bethlehem in Judah, and she played the harlot against him. After some time, after 4 months, he went to get her. And you remember her dad kept, "Oh, stay one more night, stay one more night." But they finally left. And they came to, you remember the name of the city where they spent the night, were going to spend the night in the town square? Gibeah. That's verse 14. And an old man came in from working in the fields who happened to be from the same area they were, or this man was. And so he invited them to his house and said, "You don't need to stay here." Now, do you think he knew why they didn't need to stay in the town square? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Does this story remind you of another story in the Bible? Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. And so, of course, he took them to his house. The men in the city approached the house wanting to have sex with the man. And what's amazing, the old man offers his virgin daughter and the concubine in place of the man. Now, is there anything wrong with that? That just tells you how skewed their moral compass had become. And so they sent out the concubine, and the next morning, where'd he find her? Yeah, with her hands on the threshold. And so he takes her home and dissects her into 12 pieces and sends them all over the Israelite nation. That's a pretty strong object lesson, wouldn't you say? And in fact, they had never... they'd never seen such a thing in Israel. And look at chapter 20, verse 13. I mean, the call was made. 400,000 soldiers from all the tribes except Benjamin, men fit for war, showed up to fight. And before the war started, they sent men to Gibeah and said, and to the Benjamites, and said, "You need to turn over the men who committed this crime. Now therefore deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel." Pardon me. And of course they didn't. And so they cast lots to see which tribe would fight first. It was Judah. First day, Judah goes out to fight, and it didn't turn out real well, did it? Then they sent them the second day, didn't turn out well. And so then they laid a trap. They drew them out of the city, burned the city while the soldiers were out trying to fight. Okay, here's my point. And talking about all this. What's going on in Israel? Yeah. Who's supposed to be leading Israel?
God.
Yes, God. He's their king. And in fact, that point's going to be made really clearly later. But who's supposed to be leading those tribes? Who's supposed to be leading the nation? Was it the judges? What did the judges do? They judged. They went from city to city and they judged the important matters at hand. Of course, that was some influence and some leadership. But who was supposed to be leading the tribes?
The priest.
Exactly. Those priests were given the responsibility to be the spiritual leaders of the nation. And what's happening? Why, they're just appointing their own priests. Doesn't matter if they're from Levi. It doesn't matter. What does that tell you is going on? In fact, we're going to read about Eli's sons. They were doing really well, weren't they? Yeah, for themselves. Exactly. And so they're going to be told, their dad's going to be told they're going to die. Both of them on the same day. And so they ended up killing all the women and children in the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamites. My Oklahoma tongue didn't want to say that. And so now the question was, where are they going to get their wives? The rest of the tribes were grieving because this was going to be the end of the tribe of Benjamin. And so they discovered that one city had sent no one. And so what did they do to that city?
That's where you get your wives.
Yeah. So they brought, there were 600 men from Gibeah that went to the Rock of Rimmon and was there for months. And so these 600 men needed 600 women to start families. And so they went and destroyed the city. They killed all the women, all the men, except the virgin girls. And they gave them to the Benjamites. But they're 200 short. And this is what's interesting. How did they take care of that problem? They had vowed that they would not give their daughters to the Benjamites. So they gave them the 400. And then they just decided they wouldn't give these other women to the men, but they would just allow them to come and get them when they were out celebrating a feast. An occasion of celebrating and dancing. Anything wrong with that? We found a loophole in the law, right? That's in chapter 21. And so here is the state of the nation. The Levites are failing to lead. And they need a leader. They need a spiritual leader. They need a prophet. And here's Hannah, who could not have a baby in 1 Samuel 1. And she's at the temple making her sacrifice, and she's weeping uncontrollably. And Eli, the high priest, thought she was drunk. And she said, "No, I'm not drunk." And so he blessed her that she would receive what she wanted, a child. And so she did. But in this process, she made a promise to God. What did Hannah promise God?
Give me a son who's yours.
Yeah.
For all his life.
Yes. Yes. All your life. And that's 1 Samuel 1:11. She made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. And so she didn't take him to the temple until she weaned him. And when she weaned him, she took him to the temple and she left him with Eli.
How old was he then?
Five? Till they were five, okay.
Is this the place where people get today, or the church and have a dedication ceremony when a new baby is born?
Yeah.
Parents dedicate the child to God. Is that from because of Hannah?
Yeah, because of Hannah. But I've been in congregations visiting, and even I preached at a congregation where not all the time. I guess this was something new they started, but they would actually ask the new parents with their baby to come forward, and they would have a prayer with them. And I mean, it wasn't an official ceremony per se, but the elders and all the congregation had a prayer together with those parents. You know, that God would give them wisdom and that this child would grow to become a faithful Christian, which is very appropriate. And so I did that many times in a hospital room after the child was born. My problem was I always cried. I mean, what's more heart touching than a mother holding her newborn infant? Yeah. Yes.
Children were in heaven because they were innocent. And maybe the mothers too, if they were slaves, if they were against their will.
Yeah.
So that comforted me so.
Yeah. And the children were not sinners because they weren't old enough to sin. Yeah. That's a great point. What does the word Samuel mean? Did y'all notice that? The name Samuel. That name literally means heard by God. Isn't that cool? So Hannah was heard by God. I give him to the Lord. In chapter 2 is Hannah's song of praise. And you need to read that carefully. It's pretty rich. And so she went home, and Samuel was now led by Eli. But here in chapter 2, verse 12, we get a little report on Eli's sons. And the New King James says, now the sons of Eli were corrupt. The New International Version, which is our daily Bibles, you remember what it called them? Scoundrels.
Scoundrels.
I like that word. They were scoundrels. And their custom was when somebody offered a sacrifice, the priest servant would just go, you know, they boiled the meat, some of the meat, and he would just, whatever he stuck a fork in, that's what he took. They were told what parts they were allowed to eat. And So they were wicked. Now look at verse 16 here in 1 Samuel 2. And if the man said to him, they should really burn the fat first. And you remember the fat of the animal was always burned on the altar. They should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires. He would then answer him, no, but you must give it now, and if not, I'll take it by force. And therefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord. Again, here is the spiritual condition of the Israelite nation. And in chapter 4, here in chapter 2, verse 25. Look at the end of that verse. Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father, because the Lord desired to kill them. And I like the way the NIV translates that. It's the Lord's will to put them to death. Because what they were doing was worthy of the death penalty. And in chapter 4, verse 11, guess what happened? The Ark of the covenant was captured by the Philistines. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. In chapter 3? Chapter 2, excuse me. Well, it's chapter 3. Samuel is called by God. And God called him in the night. What'd he do?
He went to Eli.
What do you want? I didn't call you. God did again. What do you want? And so Eli realized what was going on after the third time. And told him, if he calls you, then you must say, speak, Lord, for your servant hears. And so the Lord gave him somewhat distressing news for Eli, right? But Eli said, don't hold back. Tell me what he really said. And so when was Samuel rebellious to God? Exactly. And so now in Israel, after many years, now we have a spiritual leader in Israel. By the way, was Samuel, was he a Levite?
No.
Ephraimite, yeah. But is he going to do the functions of a priest? Yes. But God authorized it. And so he is going to lead them as a prophet. Here in verse 20? In chapter 3. And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba. Now, y'all know where Dan to Beersheba is? Y'all know what that's like? That's like saying from Ponca City to Thackerville. All right? Because Dan is in the far north, the city of Dan, and Beersheba is in the far south. So that's like saying from the north to the south. You'll see that expression often. Dan to Beersheba. And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. Then the Lord appeared to him in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. And so Samuel is not only a judge, but he's also a prophet. And so the Philistines capture the ark. By the way, where did the Philistines, where were they located in the land of Canaan? Where were they located? Do you know? Huh?
Gaza.
Yeah. Today we call it Gaza. Did y'all know that? That's where the Philistines are from. Gaza. Does that explain any of the hatred that still exists? And so the Philistines capture the ark in chapter 4. In verse 10, 30,000 are killed. In verses 12 through 18 here in chapter 4, Eli dies. He died when he learned that the ark had been captured by the Philistines. And you remember what he did? He's sitting in a chair. Apparently he was a big man. You remember what happened? Fell backward in his chair. He was old and heavy. It broke his neck. And that ended 40 years of leadership. And so the ark is taken in chapter 5. Look at chapter 5. And so the Philistines take the ark to Ashdod. And they do a really stupid thing, right? Where did they put the ark? Yeah, in the temple of Dagon. And they get up the next morning, and what's happened? Yeah, Dagon's on his face in the floor. They set him back up the next morning. What's happened? Yeah, his head and his arms are broke off. And in verse 6 here in chapter 5, but the hand of the Lord was heavy on the people of Ashdod, and he ravaged them and struck them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territory. And what did the men of Ashdod decide? It's time for the ark to go. Yeah. And so it somewhat goes from city to city. And why did the Philistines want the ark? Have you ever seen Raiders of the Lost Ark? So why did the Nazis want the ark? Yeah. Yeah, it gave magic power. And so if we found the ark today, would it still have that power?
No. I'd be scared to touch it, though.
Huh?
I'd be scared to touch it. I wouldn't want to be around it.
So what was significant about the ark? Why was it so sacred and holy? Yeah. And God told, when it was in the Holy of Holies, God said, between those cherubim wings, that's where my presence will be. That's where I am, that you can approach me. Of course, only one person could do that on one day of the year, on the Day of Atonement. And he did it twice. That's doing it the hard way. How do we approach God? Where do we have to go? Where does God exist now? Where's the temple? We are. Yeah. How cool is that? And so the ark brings trouble. It goes from Ashdod to Gath to Ekron, and then it is returned. And what's interesting, 50,070 men were killed due to them taking the ark?
They looked inside.
And that was one of the prohibitions even for the Jews. What was inside the ark? A copy of the Torah.
The jar of manna.
Aaron's rod. Yeah. And so after all of this, there was a call for rededication in chapter 7. And then the ark is going to be located at Kiriath Jearim, and it's going to be there for 20 years. And the people, look at this. Chapter 7, verse 2. So it was that the ark remained at Kiriath Jearim a long time. It was there 20 years. And all of the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. What does that mean? They lamented after the Lord. Huh?
Cry.
Yeah, they're crying. But why? Why are they crying? They have the ark. Why are they crying? Godly sorrow. What did Paul say godly sorrow leads to?
Repentance.
And so finally, the people as a whole are repenting and rededicating themselves to God. And look at verse 3 here. Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, If you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths from among you, and prepare your hearts for the Lord, and serve Him only, and He will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. So the children of Israel put away the Baals and Ashtoreths and served the Lord only. How long had it been since they had, you know, we started the lesson, they're making gods and putting them in their houses and appointing priests over them. And now, what with Samuel's leadership for the whole nation as a prophet and a judge, but especially a prophet, What is the definition for a prophet? What does a prophet do? A prophet will foretell the future, but is that the primary purpose of a prophet? Yeah, he's a spiritual leader. Proclaims the word of the Lord. He receives directly what God wants him to say, and he says it. Now, as Alan pointed out, that will oftentimes include what will happen, but even more, what they needed to hear from God. Do we still have prophets?
No. Well, depends on how you look at it. Yeah.
Do we still have biblically inspired prophets? And so we don't have men and women who are receiving directly from God His will and then sharing it with others. And if we did, they would need to write that down and we would need to add it to the Bible. Right? And so if I make that claim that God has given me His word, I'm claiming to be a prophet. Now, does God guide us as we're led by the Holy Spirit? Yeah, I mean, Romans 8, Paul makes that clear. If you're not led by the Spirit, you know, not good. If you don't have the Spirit of God. But does God do that miraculously by speaking directly to you? Some people make that claim. Now, as we read and study and learn God's Word, are there occasions when we realize, hey, I just this just became obvious to me. This is what God expects of me. Right? But we're studying to show ourselves approved, rightly dividing the word of truth. We're not, did Samuel have a book to study and then proclaim what he was teaching? Well, he could study the old law, but these are things that were given him directly. And so he is a prophet. Chapter 7, verses 15 through 7, he also leads as a judge. And now the people are going to demand to be led by a king. What was his name? Saul. Guess what tribe he was from?
Benjamin.
Was he the offspring of one of those 600? Had to be. Had to be. Isn't that interesting? I find that really interesting. That their first king is from the tribe of Benjamin. And the first king had serious character flaws. Because he was not a consistently godly man. Did he lead well at times? Short time. A short time. And this is something that's really interesting here in chapter 8. Let's see. I have this all marked in my daily Bible. But when he's appointed, did God empower him? Yes, the Spirit came upon him and empowered him to do the things he needed to do. Did there come a time when the Spirit was no longer empowering him? Yes. When he turned to doing his... And when was that especially? What did Saul do that was kind of like the final straw that broke all the promises God had made to him? Yeah. And so he didn't obey the command to kill everyone. But there was another instance where he offered a sacrifice himself instead of waiting on Samuel. That was the final straw. Because, now, in the past, had other people done that? Offered their own sacrifices? Yeah, but not at the temple. And not after they had been anointed as king of Israel. And so, in what ways were that wrong? Number one, the example, right? Everybody knew that he wasn't supposed to be offering sacrifice. And number two, that was direct rebellion against God's will. God considered that to be personal against him. And so, Saul is going to have a terrible life. And he's going to spend a considerable part of it trying to chase down David. Did you notice how early God told Saul, I've chosen someone else? Yeah. And so, well, we're out of time. And what an amazing section that we read. And it's going to continue to be really amazing this week. If you have questions while you're reading, text me. And then I'll include those in my comments next Sunday. Let's end with a prayer.